Hi, Christina.
Hi, Sarah.
I'm really happy to see you here in Podpreneur in our studio. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very excited to be here. A little nervous, but it's good nervous.
Nervous
good
too, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we recently met.
Yeah.
And the first question I was really eager to ask you is, how did you go from Mississippi to Grenoble? Mm,
yeah. Interesting story. In a nutshell, I would say I came to France to Orléans, lovely city of Orléans, to do a study abroad program. And then during that summer, I was with my French boyfriend at the time. He came to Grenoble for his internship at Schneider, as you know, lots of people in Grenoble. And I really liked Grenoble, but I went back to the US to finish my studies. And then I said, you know what? I was in France for a year. I really liked it. I'd like to go back a little more. What's the easiest way, I guess, to be a student? So I signed up for a master's degree in Grenoble. And then I ended up meeting a guy from Grenoble. We got married, then we got divorced, and I liked Grenoble. And I said, you know what? I've got my, my apartment here, my business here, my friends here, like my life is here. And so I've been here for 20 years now, and I'm still loving it.
Okay. So you came here in France because of love.
I came for studies and then I found love and then I said, I'll stay. And I remember when I told my parents and I said, Mom, I'm getting married to this French guy. And her first reaction was like, oh, that's a little permanent, isn't it? And I was like, well, in theory, but then not. But so far staying in France, that is. And I'm very happy here. And my parents, you know, they've always been really supportive of anything. You know, I wanted to be a professional musician. They supported that. I wanted to go to France. They've never been to France.
Oh.
They came when we got married, yeah, but they had never been and they didn't know anything. And they were very supportive of that. And so I think that's been really helpful, is just having, you know, that family behind you saying, you know, you do your thing. We want you to be happy and we'll support you, whatever you want to do. And yeah. And so that's how I've been able to stay here. And yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. So how did you become an entrepreneur?
So kind of by accident, really. You know, I was, like I said, I did studies to become a professional musician. And then wanted to be a professor at the university, which I think is maybe one of the most opposite jobs to being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, when I did my master's degree here, found out at the end of the program that, oh, you don't have a European nationality, so you can't do the agrégation.
Yes.
You can't become a university professor. And I said, okay, well, what am I going to do? And I started working, teaching English in companies in Grenoble, helping them really with their international communication, collaborations. And after a while, you know, I had a friend who, she was doing videos on YouTube teaching French. And I said, that looks like fun. I want to do that.
So you landed your YouTube channel.
And so I started my YouTube channel while I was still working in these training companies. And the idea was like, I'll do videos and I'll give them to our clients as, you know, homework, a bit more interactive and fun.
Yeah.
And then people would start finding the YouTube videos and contacting me saying, you know, do you teach over Skype? It was Skype back in the day. And I said, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, let's do it. And so that's kind of how it got started, until I got enough clients myself to say to the company where I was working, you know, it's been wonderful and thank you for all of your support. I'm going to try to do something on my own now.
Yeah.
And that was in 2015. And
so around 10 years ago,
about almost 10 years ago. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you've been an entrepreneur for 10 years.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah. It's a long, long adventure, but it's been very exciting. I mean, lots of ups and downs, and it's not easy.
Yes.
I definitely don't like glorify being an entrepreneur, because it is hard work, and I don't want to say it's not for everybody, like you're naturally born into it or not, but it's a choice, and you have to take all of the hard parts to get all of the good parts.
And do you think that you were naturally born for that? Or
no? Oh God, no. Like, no, not at all. Like, I was like, I want a steady contract. I want to be in a university doing my academic research, like, you know. But I would say it's a good thing that didn't work out, because for me, being an entrepreneur is really also, it's about building a business and it's about helping other people and making money and all of that stuff. But it's also, for me, really a means of personal development and learning about who you are and what's important for you and becoming the person that you are through doing your business.
Exactly. I couldn't say that in a better way. So what is your company all about?
So, you know, we are all about helping European entrepreneurs rise up, stand out, and scale their impact thanks to the American market, because it's just, it's a bigger market. There's more money there. People are less afraid of risk generally. So we're really all about that. Now, that's kind of because, you know, when I was a kid, like I was always fascinated with other cultures, other languages, other countries, etc.
Which one, for example?
All of them. Okay. All of them. No, no. I tried to learn French, Spanish, Cherokee, ancient Greek, Latin, modern Greek, German, Gaelic. I don't speak any of those languages.
Okay, I was about to ask.
No. Really, I speak a little bit of German, a little bit of Italian, tourist German and Italian, French fluently. But that was always my dream. It's like, I want to be able to speak all the languages in the world, to be able to go to all the countries in the world and just meet these people.
It's so fascinating.
It's so fascinating, right. But then you grow up and you realize, you know, well, we have to do this thing called business. So how can I combine that sort of love for bringing cultures and people together with this idea of doing business? And, you know, we've got the business where we do business English with Christina, and we have a conversation club, which brings together people from all over the world to practice their English. And, you know, I tell them, I'm like, you guys are literally my childhood dream, because I can meet people from all over the world. And then with the American Market Alchemist, the other part of my business, that's really about helping these European entrepreneurs to come together, really to bring together this excellence and the technology and sort of that rigorous mindset that we have here in Europe, especially in tech and science and things like that, putting that together with, you know, just the audacity, the entrepreneurial spirit, the money that is in the American market, so that they can go and they can really realize their mission and their vision on a bigger scale than maybe what's possible in their home market.
Yeah, so some kind of guide for people who want to work with the American market.
Exactly. It's, you know, I like to think of myself as like the bridge that is going to facilitate those exchanges between all of the excellence in Europe, the sort of humanist heritage that we've got here in Europe, with that sort of capitalist entrepreneurial spirit of the US, bring those together. And I just feel like we could make fireworks go off.
That's amazing. I think that there's a difference between the mindset of French people and American people. Mm. What can you say about that?
So yeah, there are some differences in mindset. And I'm always very careful to say, this is not to say that there is one that is better than the other.
Exactly.
But if we're just looking at building a business and being an entrepreneur, if we look at it from that angle, the American mindset is really going to be, hey, try it out.
Yeah.
See if it works. It might work. It might not work. But if you don't, you know, if you don't try, you'll never know.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so a lot of times that can mean, and this is something that's very frustrating for what I've seen with my French clients who work with Americans, is they'll take something and they'll just go and they'll start doing it. They're like, wait, I haven't given you all the instructions. We haven't thought this out.
Yeah.
But that's part of American culture, is just taking that initiative and going with it and figuring it out.
Action oriented. So.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so I think there's that kind of difference, whereas what I've seen from working in France, we want to really think things out and think, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? What's the plan B? What are going to be the risks?
Making lists.
Yes, meetings to have meetings, right? That kind of thing. So I think that is one of the big differences in the mindset, especially in terms of, that entrepreneurial approach.
All right. Mm. So very quickly, what are the five most important things for a French person going to do business in the USA?
Mm, right. English is going to be the first one. I'm going to say that, of course. And it doesn't mean that you have to speak English perfectly. But if you, especially if you're planning to physically go into the US and you say, I'll just learn when I get there. When you get there, you're going to have to be managing things like office, you know, finding your office space, hiring people, working with people, figuring out life in a different country. You want to have your English already pretty solid. So English is going to be important. Having a can-do attitude, a positive mindset. I would say a lot of times Americans, you know, we have a problem. Okay, well, how do we fix this problem? Let's just get to it. Let's figure it out as we go. And it goes back to what we were saying earlier, yeah. that positive attitude. Customer service is, of course, a huge thing in the U.S.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You know, Yelp, Google reviews, they can make or break a business. So you really want to have your customer service really solid. Then I would also say having that sort of beginner's mindset as well, even if you have had your business in your country for 15, 20 years, you know it, you're going into a market where the mentalities are different, the values are different, the way of doing business is different, the customer expectations are different. So you really have to go in there, take your experience, but say, I'm really going into this unknown territory. How can I detach myself from my preconceived notions and learn from what I see? And then a fifth one, I would say reactivity. Things go very fast in the U.S. compared to here in Europe. And that also is true in terms of customer expectations. They really, expect a response quickly. And if you're not quick on this kind of, you know, getting back to your customers, you can lose business.
Yeah. So talking about reactivity, how different it is. In France and in the USA?
Yeah. So I would say in terms of customer expectations, first of all, Americans, it's, you know, for better or worse, kind of expect things immediately, not very patient.
How immediately?
Like right now.
Okay.
You know, I think I saw something, on a, you know, it's like a chat bot, you know, you go onto a site, and it's, you know, I typed in my question and then it said, you know, we apologize for the delay. We will get to you in 2 minutes. You know, I'm like, I'm going to go check my, it's okay. 2 minutes. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Whereas for example, in France, and personally, I think this is a good thing. You have the weekend. People don't really expect you to respond on the weekend or if there's a holiday or things like that. And so I feel like in France, people are willing to wait a little more, whereas Americans can be very impatient about things. I mean, just a story. I remember I had two of my cousins come over from the U.S. and we were visiting France and we went to a restaurant. And of course, we know that, you know, in the U.S., we had 27 minutes for our lunch break in school.
All right.
It was very short. And we go into this restaurant and we order the food. And of course, you know, it takes some time. At some point, my cousin, he just got up and left. He's like, I'm not waiting around. I'm not waiting 30 minutes for my food. And he just got up and left. So, and I was just like, oh my goodness.
But the way of living is just different when it comes to food.
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, oh my God, you're being the ugly American. Please, you're embarrassed. You know, I was quite embarrassed about that. And so I had to apologize. But I think that's an example. They're just not patient generally. Yeah.
And do Americans work a lot on weekends too?
No. Totally. Yeah. Totally. There is really no sort of difference, I would say. I mean, of course, if you work in an office, you get the weekends off, et cetera.
Obviously.
But very often people will be checking their emails, checking in on work, things like that. There's this joke where, it was a video I saw on Instagram, I think, and it's, you know, European manager, sorry, I'm going off on vacation for 3 weeks. I'm totally not available. I'll write back to you at the end of August when I return. The Americans out of office messages, I'm having kidney surgery at 2 p.m. So I might be out for about 5 minutes, but if there's anything urgent, here's my wife's number, call her and she will let me know as soon as I wake up and I'll get back to you. So it's quite exaggerated, but I think that does illustrate the difference in, like you said, the expectations and this idea of really work. Your life kind of revolves around work. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's when you're passionate about work, I think that you tend to go to the American way of doing business.
Right. Yeah. I know a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners in France, which, you know, they're not afraid. It's Sunday. I can't touch my work. No, they want to do the work because it's so exciting and they love it so much. And I would say, whereas in Europe, if you're like that, you're kind of seen as a little too much. Like, hey, you need to slow down. Yeah, exactly. Whereas in the US, that's just kind of like the normal way of life.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Let's go back to working with Americans. So sure. What do you think holds French entrepreneurs back when they try to go into business in the USA?
So what holds them back? You know, I would say maybe there are five things. I would say it's clarity. When they're going into the US market, just being able to explain very clearly what they do and in everyday words, you know, especially I see this here in Grenoble, a lot of tech, businesses, I go and I'll talk to them and I'll say, hey, what do you do? And it's something like what I hear, the impression, it's like, blah, 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 embedded systems, blah, 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 blockchain, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know what you just told me. Yeah. So being able to really explain very clearly what you do, because if no clarity, no business. The second thing is being unconvincing. And this comes through, you know, how do you pitch? How do you talk about what you're doing? What's the energy and the passion? We know the kind of stereotype is that Americans are very, you know, oh, it's amazing. And they're very exaggerated.
Yeah, emphasis. Yeah.
Exactly. But if you don't put that into the way that you talk about what you do, it's really going to fall flat and you're going to be unconvincing. The third one I would say is maybe burnout, in the sense that if you are not clear, if you are unconvincing, you're going to keep making those same mistakes and you're just not going to see any progress. And that's going to burn you out because you're doing all the hard work. You're going to these conferences, to these accelerator programs, traveling to the US, but you're not seeing the results. So burnout from that. I would also say being invisible. You know, the American market, it's a huge market.
Yeah.
There is a ton of competition because it's a huge market, lots of potential, lots of people come to it. Yeah, exactly. And if you are invisible, if you don't stand out, then your business is going to die. And you don't necessarily stand out by talking about the technology that you have and how innovative, everybody's innovative, everybody's cutting edge.
Of course.
Right. So you're going to stand out by your story, your history. How did you, why did you do this? How did you do this?
Yeah, the storytelling.
The storytelling. Yes, exactly. Being invisible. And the last one I think is trying to go solo, meaning, you know, oh, the US, it's a Western culture. We kind of look alike. We have a lot of similar references. I go to the US for my vacation every year.
It's not the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. You'll understand sort of the surface of the US. It's not like you're going into, I don't know, China, where it's maybe totally foreign on the surface. But when you dig deeper, the differences between, for example, French culture and American culture, they are as big as the differences between French and Chinese culture. And so if you're trying to figure that out alone, that is a recipe for disaster.
Okay. Mm. Let's talk about one big thing, money.
Okay,
Do you think that Americans are more comfortable with money than French people or not?
So I would say yes and no. There's a book that I'm reading at the moment, which I love the title. It's called You're a Badass at Making Money. So like very clearly, I recommend this book to everyone. Written by an American author, but the first chapter she starts out talking about, she's like, you know what? Money, it's a little like sex. Everybody's expected to know how to do it, to be really good at it. But we can't really talk about it because it's a little dirty and it's just not classy to talk about
it. Totally.
So I feel like it's like that. And in the US, it's similar in the sense that, you know, I see people say, oh, you can ask Americans about their salary, et cetera. And so I'm like, no, that's not totally fine.
Oh.
If you're close to them, yes.
You can ask.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not like a topic of small talk, I would say.
No.
But maybe where the difference is that making money is seen as kind of in that realm of self-help. And so it's like, you know what? I know that I have this problem. I'm okay with admitting that and admitting that I want to solve this problem, that I want to be better at managing my money, at making money. I have a business because I want to make money.
Of course.
And I think the difference is, you know, I feel like in Europe, it's like, yeah, I have a business, and you're like, yeah, but you know, I'm not really in it to make money.
Yeah,
yes,
you're not
you are.
Really allowed to talk about money because it's dirty, because, you know,
exactly.
You kind of feel shame.
Yeah.
And it's weird.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, no, you start a business. If you want to have a business and you don't want to make money, go be a volunteer. Yeah,
exactly. It's not a charity. So.
Exactly. Right. And so I feel like the difference is there in that in the US, it is okay to say, I want to make a ton of money. And it's also because in the US, what is kind of expected, you know, philanthropy and giving back to the community, you're going to go and make a ton of money and then you're going to come back and you're going to give back to your community. You're going to do things for free to help people who don't yet have their money, but they're on the way
Absolutely.
To making money. And it's just, I would say it's even though we do have a lot of expressions like money is the root of all evil and, you know, dirty money and things like that, it is contradictory because we also see it as a force for good.
Yeah, I think that money solves a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And exactly, if you have a lot of money, you can help people. You have the free time to help people.
Exactly. It's a little like very often we talk about that metaphor of, you know, when you're in the airplane and the mask drops down, you got to put yours on first so you can help others. And it's the same thing. Nobody is, you know, making society better by being poor. But if you've got money and you can create money, you can come back and make society better. And I think that's the difference, is realizing that and saying, you know, this is what I'm going to do with my money when I get filthy rich, another expression.
Yeah. When you have money, actually, you can buy things and give back to people
exactly.
who are working.
Yeah.
If you're buying cheap things, it's not giving back to people.
Exactly. That's
so
it. That's
a virtuous circle.
Totally. Yeah.
Are there any other stereotypes that we have of the USA that are not true?
So I would say one that I hear very often is Americans are superficial because, you know, he said all of my business ideas, they were totally awesome. Everything was amazing. And then I never heard back from them. And it can give that impression that it's very superficial and very fake. But really, again, when we dig deeper, we see it's really a difference of the culture and the values. Americans are very pudic, let's say, you know, very, they're not very good at criticism and conflict and things like that. And so telling someone, going out and openly criticizing something, especially if you've just met them, that's not something that we're comfortable with. So what's the default response? Awesome. You know, and it doesn't mean I really believe that your idea is incredible. It means like I am acknowledging that you have told me something, basically.
Yeah, they're just positive people. So.
Exactly. It's really that. And I think that is a stereotype that is true, is that there is this kind of more positive attitude, at least that is expressed outwardly. So I would say that stereotype that's superficial, no, it's just that we tend to want to create a positive atmosphere, to avoid conflict, to avoid criticism, etc. So I think that's one stereotype. Perhaps also this stereotype that it's easier to get to know Americans. I think we feel like, you know, Europe, like France and Germany, people are kind of closed off and it's very hard. Americans, you can go and you can talk to anybody. Yeah, you can. Small talk is a big part of American culture. But if you want to get deeper into that relationship, that's where it can be quite difficult. And there's this metaphor of coconuts and peaches where we say, you know, French people and other nationalities, Germans, Russians, et cetera, are more like coconuts. It's very hard. It's a little rough on the edges. But once you get in and you've gotten past that, it's nice and sweet and you're in there.
Okay.
You've got that relationship. Americans, more like peaches. It's kind of nice and sweet and fuzzy on the outside. But after you've gotten past that, you hit that hard core that is very hard to really get into. And so that's the difference. And I think that explains why French people are going to say Americans are superficial and Americans are going to say French people are rude.
Mm.
It's just a difference of culture and values and what's expected in those kind of initial interactions.
Okay. And do you think French people are more negative in a sense, in a certain way?
I feel like they are more critical. And I don't think that that is necessarily a bad thing. I think that it can come across as a negative attitude. And I've had French people who, when they go into like an American office to work with American colleagues, and say, you know, I've kind of assumed I've owned my role as the negative Frenchie, because they're going to be the one in the meeting that is always questioning ideas and challenging ideas, which I think is healthy. Now, there's a way to do that, to put maybe a positive, you know, polish on it so that it's not always just aggressive and negative, et cetera.
Like a sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Like the sandwich, you know, positive feedback, some criticism, some and, positive feedback. Yeah. So I think that they maybe do have a tendency to see some of the negative points first. And then the positive was Americans, like we said, tend to have a more positive can-do attitude. All right, we got a problem. No worries. Let's fix it.
Yeah, that's the American mindset, I should say.
Yeah.
Let's talk about another big subject, failure. Do you think there's a difference when it comes to failure in France, and in America?
So there is definitely a difference in the way that that failure is perceived, and also I think the way that we talk about failure. In the U.S., like we said, because we do have this sort of can-do attitude, hey, we got a problem, let's just try to solve it, let's just test out things and see what works. We kind of know that not everything's going to work. I mean, it would be nice if it did, but that's not life. And so it's just kind of like, hey, you tried, it didn't work, go on to something else. No, like there's just kind of no drama around it. I mean, I've had American friends who they were like, yeah, I started off this business, I lost $200,000.
That's okay.
Whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my, like I would probably have to go see a therapist and be crying for five weeks if that happened to me. So I think there is that idea of, hey, it's just part of doing things. Whereas in France, and I read an article about this morning, and what it said is that there is this kind of stigma around failure. Whereas it's starting to change in France, and there is a change in this mindset, but I think it's still not as open and as accepted. And that if you try to start a company, for example, and it fails, then kind of depending on who you're talking to, they will confuse the business failure with your personal failure.
Totally.
You failed, so you are a failure. No, I tried something, it didn't work. That was a failure, but I learned from it, and now I'm going to do better next time, or I know maybe which path I want to take following that experience. So there is definitely a difference. But again, it's starting to change in France, and I think in the entrepreneurial community, there is a big difference between, you know, let's say your friend entrepreneur who's doing their business versus like your mother-in-law who just doesn't know what you do and thinks that you've got to succeed every single time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that American people are more wired to be comfortable with failure. Whether in France, you know, if you fail, then it's feels kind of shame.
Yeah,
it's a drama and you have to stop this because you're not made for that. And I think that the American way is a bit more interesting and a way to experience things.
Yeah. It definitely helps, I think, to have less fear about doing things because you don't necessarily feel as much, I mean, there's still pressure and you don't want to lose all your money, et cetera. But it's, you know, people are not going to look at you as a failure because you failed at one or 50 projects. Yeah.
Yeah. Recently, I stumbled upon a post on LinkedIn and it was about Tim Ferriss. Was a book writer, and he made a resume of all of his failure.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think it's helping him understanding what went wrong and what went good, and that's okay.
Exactly, and I think that's really a good exercise to do. Actually, is we often want to look and we often want to share our victories and the things that worked, but sitting down and saying, what did I try and what did I fail at, and how did that help me in the end? And sharing that and being more open about that, I feel like that is just a service that we should do for everybody to say, you know what, from the outside, Maybe this looks easy,
yeah.
But in reality, for every one idea that I've tried and that worked, I probably had 10 that I felt were just like miserable failures because they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. So we talked about 5 tips to work with the American. What is the one thing to avoid when you work with American market or Americans?
I would say the one thing to avoid, if we're talking about mindset, I think it would be, again, just not being flexible, not being willing to talk with the customer to find a solution together. The customer comes in, they're looking for something. It's maybe not exactly what you offer, but to say, hey, yeah, we can do that. Let's work on that. Let's find a way to do it. Now, I mean, if you build houses and your customer wants you to cook them a meal, I'm not talking about that. But just being very, you know, you don't want to be very rigid in the way that you interact with your customers. And you want to always see that as a, let's try to do this together. It's kind of a teamwork. So you,
yeah
definitely don't want to be very fixed and very rigid in your ideas, because that's just not going
to
work.
Yeah. So they're more, you have to be action oriented, and you have to be more about solving problems.
Exactly.
And not pointing out which one made the fault.
Yeah, exactly. Being solution oriented, I would say. Don't be problem oriented, or don't be this is not possible oriented, but be how can we make this possible oriented.
Yeah. All right. The last thing I wanted to ask you is, why would someone work with you today to improve their English when there are actually so many solutions? There are applications, there are websites.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. So if they're looking to go into the US market and they know that they really need to improve on their English, I would say one reason is because we're not just going to work on the language. Like you said, there are tons of apps. There are tons of English language schools and companies. I mean, you don't need me to teach you English. however, what we're going to do is really to help you to understand and interpret the English that you're hearing and that you're using with your American contacts. So you're saying this. How are they interpreting that? What are they hearing? They are saying this. What does that actually mean? And to really help them to sort of decode not just the English language, but also the cultural and the business codes that are behind all of that language. So that's going to be really important. I would say also just one of the things that we've always been about in terms of the English teaching is super concrete. Like, we want you to come in and we want you to be able to leave every session with something that you can go and apply in your work and make a change in your work immediately, not have to wait, you know, 20 hours of training to be able to see some kind of improvement in your grammar. Honestly, that's not the biggest point, the grammar. It's really, how do I use this language to do something to accomplish a goal concretely with all those communication codes that come into, you know, intercultural business? And we're going to really help them with that. And English is really just kind of the vehicle.
Yeah. And what kind of tips and tricks could you give us to help French people talk English?
Yeah. So I would say practice. Like, that's got to be the first thing. And I would say I've got a conversation club that helps you to do that.
Yeah.
But there are many ways that you can go and practice. But you just have to get over that fear of speaking and just go out and practice as much as possible, no matter what your level. Even if you are a beginner, start speaking with, maybe it's with a teacher, so that you can practice those very easy phrases, but you have got to get out there and use the language, not study the language.
Yeah, and I think you have to find the best way to learn English.
Exactly.
Whether it is music, TV shows, podcasts, you have to find the way to learn English.
Exactly.
And you have to accept that sometimes you do not understand 100%
exactly.
of the conversation. It's okay.
Exactly, exactly. And I would say, you said finding the best way. I'd say find what works for you. And it's probably going to be a mix of things. And it's even better if it's a mix of things, because then you're really working on, you know, the agility of your brain to be able to adapt to different modes of communication. So mix it up. Get out there and talk to people, native speakers, non-native speakers. It does not matter. Just talk. And don't be afraid of your accent. I have so many people that say, I hate my accent. I'm like, we all have an accent. That's fine. Just, you know, go out and practice and do it. And it's part of who you are, and be proud of it. And yeah, get over that fear and just do it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Do you have any last thing to say to end this podcast?
So any last things to say? You know, I would say one of the mottos that I really took to heart, it's feel the fear and do it anyway. And when you're going into a new market, when you are building a business, when you are speaking a language, all of those are very scary experiences. Yeah. You've got to feel that fear. You've got to get comfortable with feeling the discomfort. And then you take action and you figure it out as you go. I mean, if I had waited, you know, to start my business, I've got to get the business plan in place. I got to learn how to make a site. I got to do perfect YouTube. Like, I never would have started it. But my first YouTube videos, they're crap. They're still on YouTube. You
do
can
you
see
think
them.
They're really crap?
I watch them. I'm like, oh my goodness, how did I ever publish this? But they are still on YouTube. You can still go and watch them. And you've just got to feel that fear and to know that at the beginning, it's probably going to be pretty crappy. That's part, you learn as you go. But if you never go, you're never going to learn.
Absolutely. Mm. Thank you so much, Christina.
Thank you very much, Sarah.